Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. Welcome to Listen to Older Voices and Part 3, the penultimate program of the life and times of baby boomer Chris Stockley. We've learned that Chris was born in the United Kingdom and developed a passion for music at a young age, a passion that would lead him to eventually being a key member of some of our most important bands of the late 1960s through into the 70s. Arriving in Melbourne with his parents in the early 1960s, he worked hard at his craft, which led him to his first really popular group, Axiom. When Axiom fails in the United Kingdom, it leads to Chris desperately seeking to re-involve himself in his musical passions. This week, we spend much of the program peeling back the layers of the development and history of one of Australia's most iconic groups, the Dingoes, and Chris's involvement. Chris holds little back as we follow their success, their trip to the United States for a tour, and how, just as it was ready to explode, it all imploded. This was a dark time for Chris, but it led to other opportunities, as we'll learn. We pick up now with Chris telling the story of getting back to Australia after Axiom folded.
Wayne, the manager, approached Sitmar to get us on a boat to work our way back. And that was pretty good. But I had to leave Robin. She was too pregnant to travel. And so I had to miss the birth of my child, of Shay, you know, because I was on
the boat.
Well, on the way back. But anyway, that happens. But and that was how we got back to Australia anyway. And I've got to say, the trip back was just a nightmare. Going over was great. It was 6 weeks going over, and we went to some great places, and we never really, once we were outside of Australian waters, we didn't really have any bad weather. I think the only rough patch going over was outside of Portugal. But even then, we got to go to Lisbon, and that was fantastic, you know, even if for a day. But we went through the Suez Canal, and that was going over, and we were looking forward to coming back on the boat. At least that would be something. But it was a four-week trip, but it seemed like 10 times as long. The first stop was the Canary Islands. That was great. We had fun there. The next stop, we were at sea till we got to Cape Town. So we went right through down that coast of Africa. It's so rough and, you know, and we were all seasick, really horribly seasick. The boat pitched and rocked. The equipment was flying across the floor. Oh. We had to rope down amps and drums. And one night, Mick Holden actually flew over his drums and ended up the other side of the room.
Serious.
It was really, really rough. I've got no idea. And anyway, that was... And the next stop after Cape Town was Fremantle. So it was the worst trip. And eventually back to Melbourne and back to nothing.
Back to nothing.
No band, no future. And that was a...
So how did the Dingoes come about?
Well, we ended back in Melbourne, Australia with nothing, basically. And I just kicked around trying to find work, very difficult. I was working. Don actually put a band together, like a sort of covers band based on the Delaney Bonney sort of lineup. And we were doing a few gigs. And to cut to the chase, it was good. We were doing, you know, like a regular sort of residency thing. But I got contacted by Broderick Smith, who said that he and Karen Tolhus were putting a band together and would I be interested. And I remember Broderick and Karen because they were the other band, or the other main band, I guess, that were at Chicago. So we had a very, very similar taste in music, which was great for me because I must say Axiom was a bit poppy for me. I never really settled. It was a great band for me because, as I said, it taught me about original music and so on. But anyway, so here we go with Broderick and Karen, which obviously suited me in every way, stylistically, and I knew them as big blues fans and all that. So We got put together a band with John Lee on drums and John Boyce, and made an album very quickly.
We also very quickly gathered a following, didn't
you? Yeah, we did. It was a magic time, because earlier when I was speaking about how no license gigs, well, that changed, obviously, and we came in at the start of the pub rock thing, and it was like magic. I mean, people were going out. You just had to put a sign outside saying band, and the place was packed. You know? And the Dingoes benefited very much from that. Like, obviously, the Station Hotel was our home, and that created a real stir. But there were also like Martini's and Garrison and other places where we'd play. And we developed a huge following. But I think Australia was really ripe for it. There were a lot of bands around at the same time, and anything Ross Wilson was involved in, and Mike Rudd and these people, they were all fantastically successful. Yeah, huge following. And we were the critics' darlings as well. They loved what we were doing. And once again, we ventured into the sort of country-ish, R&B-ish, rootsy sort of thing. I guess we call it Americana these days. And it was just fantastic, you know, and a really, really golden time, fantastic time for us. We were very successful in Australia. And then we got picked up by an American management company, Peter Rudge, who'd been out here with the Rolling Stones, had seen us play, and Billy McCartney, who was working for him at the time, thought we'd be a good bet. They were looking at various Australian bands to take over, and I won't go into naming the other ones that didn't make it. they thought we'd be the best, because Peter Rudge had Lynyrd Skynyrd at the time. Mm-hmm. And also the Younger Brothers band, 38 Special, he was working very closely with the Stones and the Who. And this man had what it takes to, you know, get a band happening. So we waited and waited and waited and went through contracts and legal crap. Eventually we got to Canada, where we had to wait for visas and things to come through. Canada was a bit of a disappointment for us, because it was like they'd started the cover band thing long, long before this happened in Melbourne. It was a completely foreign to us. In a Melbourne and Sydney, whatever, if you're a cover band, you couldn't get a gig. You wouldn't get a serious gig. No. You'd be a wedding band or whatever. Yes. But over there, in Canada, there was two very big parties. You had the fantastic, Toronto, the side of Toronto that gave you, you know, Neil Young and Joni Mitchell and the band and those sort of people. Then you had the other side of Toronto, which was all the cover bars. And we'd never seen anything like it. And to get a gig in these bars, you had to show a guy your song list. And if he didn't know the songs, you wouldn't get a gig.
Oh, God.
And the only reason we got any gigs in Ontario really at the time was because of Peter's power. Because he had the Stones, he could drop all kinds of hints that, you know, that they should look after the Dingoes if they wanted to, get a taste of something else further down the track. But we were really glad to see the back of Toronto at the end of it. And when we moved to Mill Valley, California, which was like heaven for us, because great weather, great place, full of musicians, you know, run into Miramar.
The future really looked bright at that stage, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, we were looking good. And we moved to Mill Valley, made the record in San Francisco with Elliot Mazer, and that was okay, you know. It wasn't, once again, it's not all plain sailing making a record. It was pretty difficult.
Do you have a favourite track from that album? Was that hard? Is that like saying, which is your favourite child?
Well, I this is an important point for me, is that the Dingoes seem to be remembered for Way Out West and Boy on the Run, which is kind of soft country music.
Living and working on the land.
But as anyone knows who saw the Dingoes in their heyday at the station or those places, we were a hard rock band. And it was bands like AC/DC and guys from Cold Chisel come and see us when they were starting out because we were such a hard rock band. And Broderick had that real high tenor, like, you know, just as Bomb did and, you know, all these people and Jimmy. And that's... I always hate that we're associated with this soft rock thing, soft country rock thing, when, to me, the guts of the band was like Smooth Sailing and Come On Down, Shine A Light, and Sydney Ladies, the real rock stuff.
Shine A Light, that's one of your compositions,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Listen to older voices, revisiting through recollections. I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with Chris Stockley. And Chris is talking about the music of the Dingoes when he was in the band as one of the guitarists.
And I much preferred that real hard rock side of the band. And in actual fact, we were 90% that, but people tend to remember us for the other 10%, you know, which I always think is a bit disappointing. But so, yeah, if you say my favourite track, I'll probably say, I think possibly Smooth Sailing, which Karen wrote, is the closest thing to, what's the word, you know, like getting
essence.
Down to,
the essence of
synthesizing the one song, you know,
that
would give a better example of what the Dingoes are all about. Yeah, the center would have been something like Smooth Sailing, and Broderick singing at the top of his range, belting it out. There won't be any smooth sailing, no. Smooth sailing. If you run out of gas somewhere on the lonesome highway. Slide guitar, electric guitar, you know, and thumping bass and drums. That's the Dingoes that I remember. And so that would have been my favourite track off that album, I think.
So what went wrong? Because the world was your oyster. So much was promised. You had the big tour lined up.
We got a lot of support from A&M Records. A&M was a great label to be signed to. We had really good... the other artists on A&M were all incredibly huge and people that we really admired. We got a lot of support. We had Sir Productions, Peter Rudge's management company, backing us. We started out touring, and it was fantastic. We did small clubs around all over the states in a 29-foot camper van, mostly, and flying between the big cities. But we did small gigs, supports, and Peter had a great strategy. We're just going to get bigger and bigger rooms. And I remember one of the last on that particular tour was we were supporting Charlie Daniels and a couple of other bands like that who were really up our alley in a way, you know, hard rock and with a bit of country influence. And we were supposed to join up with Lynyrd Skynyrd at some stage and start doing supports for them. And that's when the whole thing fell in the heap, because it's well known now that Skynyrd's plane went down, taking most of the band with him. And to cut a long story short, basically the momentum, the vibe and the money went out of Sir Productions, and we were sort of left high and dry, and without that support, A&M sort of got a bit, you know, edgy about how much more money they were going to invest. And it was kind of like, to an extent, a bit like a mini Axiom sort of thing, when things weren't going right and things start to fall apart and people look for someone to blame. And I was in a very, very bad state of mind at that stage. And I kind of was unceremoniously booted out and ended up in Toronto with Greg Quill and Sam C.
Yes. Yeah, well, I mean, you'd be in good company with so many professional musicians, haven't you? Because that's the nature of the game, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
The blame game takes its toll.
Mm-hmm.
It does. So you actually reacquainted yourself with Sam C. not too many years later on with Stockley C. and Mason.
Well, yeah, when we were playing with Greg in Toronto, but it was kind of going nowhere, and I don't know why that was. I think Toronto was pretty depressing for everybody. And we came back to do a tour of Australia, because Greg was still pretty well known for his hits with country radio. And we came back and did that, and that was okay, but it just didn't have the vibe. It was like people were trying to light a fire that had gone out a bit, you know.
Yes.
And Greg really needed a new product, which he wasn't really turning much out. So Sam and I thought we could probably get a band together in Australia. And then my first thought for a singer was Glyn Mason, because I'd worked with Glyn a bit before, and I was, you know,
amazing voice,
incredible guitar player and singer, and been in some of the best bands in Australia. And it so happened his band had just broken up, and he was at a bit of a loose end. And when we got Glyn, it sort of fell into place, and we got a great rhythm section of Jeff Rosenberg and Dave Stewart, and went down. Worked our ass off rehearsing once again all our own songs, mainly all our own songs, except for a few select covers. And we worked, vocal harmonies, guitar harmonies, and we became a really, really good live band. And if anyone doubts that, they should have a look at the Stockley C. Mason movie, which was made. Because when I didn't see it for many, many, many years, and I, you know, I got a copy of it and put it, and I could not believe how good that band was. You know, and I know now why it was so popular. We used to pack every pub in Melbourne out with that band, and as I said, no bullshit. It was just one of the best live bands, and we worked hard to make it that way.
It doesn't happen just because you got three people with names. No, just through the hard work.
Yeah, we did a lot of hard work.
Yeah,
and it was good, and. And then punk was starting to happen, and I think it was a really bad timing for Stockley C. Mason band in that we were considered a bit squeaky clean, you know. I mean, we're a pretty good rock and roll band, but I suppose we did have a bit flash harmonies and the flash guitar harmonies, and there was a little tiny bit of Little River Band in it, which I didn't really like myself, but it was kind of... You can't, when you're doing lots of harmonies, and let's face it, everyone could sing, so we use the harmonies, and guitar harmonies, you're going to get a bit of that Eaglesy, LRB type thing. And I think that worked against us. We should have been more a dirty rock band like the Dingoes were and taken that as our market, not...
It was hindsight's fault, a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Hindsight is a wonderful thing. And when you're doing something, you're not fully aware of what you're doing, why you're doing it. You just do it.
It evolves around you. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And I think with the punk thing coming in, we were a little bit nice, you know, and we tuned up and everything. I think the Mushroom Records sort of were looking at things more in the younger and punkier sort of thing. And once again it happened that we just got kind of shunted aside. And then Glenn had enough and quit, and that basically was the end of the band.
Australia is an interesting country when it comes to music, because we've had some absolutely fantastic musicians. We've had some brilliant pieces of music composed and recorded. But unlike the States, where they almost venerate musicians as the older they get, it's not quite the case here, is it?
No, but I'll tell you, a lot of it's population. Mm. It's quite simply population. In America, say for instance, if you have the level of success like the Dingoes did or Stockley C. Mason had, you would be able to trade off that for the rest of your life, because you'd have enough. The percentage of people in America is a much higher number of people than it is here.
Yes.
So you could go on forever. And you wouldn't even play the same town twice. No. You know, like, it's not like here where you play 5 gigs a week or something. Yeah, and we had that level of success in the States, could have kept going. We'd have been okay.
Yeah.
Listen to older voices, where stories from the past find a home in the present.
The years have moved on, and you've kept not just your music career alive, but you've actually kept evolving, haven't you? Mm-hmm. You've now taken up a lot more role in terms of your own vocal abilities and a lot more writing.
Mm-hmm.
Has that given you more pleasure than the work previously, or is that a different...
Oh, yeah, I think you started writing in the Dingoes when it became obvious if you want to be part of the game, you've got to start writing. And my previous experience with Axiom was, these guys write. You have to write. So it was like a necessity, an artistic and really a financial necessity if you want to be part of that. So that's when I started writing. But then, of course, I had various sidetracking things. I had, I can't even remember had Blue Heelers, which I was writing country rock stuff with, and that was a really good band. And I joined Jimmy Barnes for a while, which once again was a real shock to the system, and I was working again on a totally different level. Totally. I mean, this was real rock stardom, which I'd never experienced on that level.
And the hard rocks, which you'd always had a little element in yourself.
Oh, yeah. And it was probably a bit harder than what I'm up for, but it was certainly a great experience. All these things happen, and, you know, of course I kept playing. Bands break up, bands get together. And eventually I was kind of fed up with starting bands and having to cajole people into doing my songs, singing the way I wanted them sung, playing in the way I wanted them. So that was the catalyst of saying, before I die, I'm going to do my own record.
Do join Chris and I next week for the final part of his story, which focuses largely on his songwriting and his current musical life. But we also learn more about Chris, the person behind the music. That's next week. Chris Stockley on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Turak Times.